Attention contractors, on May 6th, you're invited to a free web class all about hiring. Look, there's no denying we're in a skilled labor shortage, and it feels impossible these days to hire good people. But I've conducted over 2,400 interviews for trades positions, and I'm telling you, this can be done. You're just kind of doing it wrong. So, if you want the best performing job ad templates contractors are using in 2025, some simple interview tactics that are going to double your show up rates, and some tips to become the only place in town that A players want to work, this web class is for you. May 6th, let's make it happen, and I'll see you there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. As you are no doubt well aware by now, systemizing your business is a lot harder than a younger version of yourself thought. Am I right? If you're like me, you naively believed for a while, hey, I'll just hire some people, build really good systems, and boom, I'm a millionaire. No, the reality is building systems that people actually follow is more work, requires more bandwidth, requires more change management and iteration than most business gurus make it seem. And that is why I am floored to have David Jennings on the show today. He's the author of Systemology and his upcoming book, Systems Champion. And in today's conversation, we are going to provide a system for building systems. Super relevant, very timely, and a very enjoyable conversation. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Let's dive in. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less.
So guys, I actually have a little announcement to make. After over 200 episodes, the time has sadly come for me, Benji, to move on from Contractor Evolution. The show isn't going anywhere, don't worry, and you can expect to learn more about our new host in the coming days and weeks, but I just wanted to plant the seed early. It's been an incredible journey, and with a huge amount of help from my team, I've been beyond humbled to host and produce this show for you all over the past 4 years. I want you to stay subscribed, stay tuned. We have a ton of great content still coming down the pipe. I just wanted to give you a heads up.
Dave Jennings, welcome to the podcast, my friend. It's great to have you.
An absolute pleasure to be here.
An easy one to start. Do you want to define the word systems for us?
Yes. The way I think about it is just a series of steps that, when followed, produce a consistent outcome. I actually lump a whole lot of definitions and words in and just put it under the systems bracket. Some people talk about them as how-to documents, SOPs, standard operating procedures, workflows, detailed work instructions. For me, I just put it all under that one definition of a series of steps that, when followed, produce a consistent outcome.
You, I'm sure, have toured around and seen a whole bunch of businesses in your time, as have I. I'll go out on a limb here and make a claim. I think that the vast majority of businesses that I look at are dramatically under-systemized, and not by a little, like not like, oh, there's a couple things that we could clean up here. Like in many cases, it's like a system black hole. There's like some people working exceptionally hard, and there's maybe like an overarching structure or narrative. There's kind of maybe a brand idea and a service that they have that they care about and they want to do a good job on. There's sort of tribal knowledge passed down from person to person. But if you looked at the core guts of the business, in many cases, there isn't actually that much there. And I wonder, first of all, do you agree or disagree with that? And second of all, if you're on the same page as me, I wonder if you have a thought as to why that is.
I definitely see it. Like, I look into thousands of businesses in the work that I do, and the vast majority of them are just loosely sort of stuck together. It almost feels like duct tape sometimes, just holding them together. I think a lot of it comes from the idea that the business owner typically knows how to do the technical work, and they're very strong at doing that thing. They're great at being on the tools, and they don't necessarily always have the skills required to run a business that delivers that technical work. So there's a lot of these gaps, and the gaps can occur in different locations. Sometimes the business owner, because they know how to do the technical work so well, that oftentimes is one of the least systemized parts because they know it and because it's trapped in their head. So that's a big part of why.
Do you hear, because I do, I hear a lot of excuses around this and I'm like, I don't have time. I don't know how. There's sort of like the run of the mill sound bites that I feel like I hear when you're asking someone, and not in like a interrogative. Well, I'm not like a grilling these people. I'm just sort of like, hey, why isn't there a standard onboarding process for a new technician? You hire 15 of these people a year. This is pretty repeatable. Like, let's get some steps in place, and they'll, you know, have some excuse or some reason as to why they haven't done it. What are the most common ones that you hear? Do you think there's any validity to them?
Yeah, there are excuses as to why the business owner might not have installed them. And then there's also a set of excuses for why team members might not follow process as well. Like you mentioned, time is a big one. I think some other ones are people not prioritizing. They're like a lot of I don't want to. Sometimes there's not clear expectation outlined also. And that's another big reason people don't follow process is, well, I didn't really know it was expected of me. And they might not have some sort of project management platform or something that clearly articulates who is doing what by when. So this doesn't happen naturally or automatically. You have to decide this is the type of work culture that you want to build. And you have to build, we're talking about building transparent, accountable workplaces where everything that needs to be done is happening out in the open so everybody else can see. So it's very clear what needs to be done and who is doing it by when. That then removes a lot of the excuses. And then the final ones start to surface, which is they can oftentimes be lumped into the I don't want to, or I don't see this as a priority, or, you know, I've always done it this way, so why do we have to change? And you address those in slightly different ways. But the first thing to do is just remove those first two excuses of I don't know how and I didn't know it was expected of me.
This, I think, is a really interesting question. I wonder if you've reflected on it, and we may not get to a final answer on this today. It feels like something that could be debated forever. But, you know, like when I look out there, I see, to me, a pretty clear difference between what I would just say good systemizers and bad systemizers, at the risk of being overly simplistic. There are people that are like really, really good. I mean, I can think of literally five plumbers who are the best systemizers I know. They install tech very, very quickly. They're up to date on trends. They understand software at a deep level. They understand process at a deep level. They're not slow to build. Like, they can identify a problem and then create a V1 and install it and then iterate to make the final version. Like, they're just good at it. And then there's some people who have been in business for 15 years and they're still like they're still not, they have really nothing in place, and the systems that they do have were forced down their throat by a coach like us, or an employee did it for them. So there's like, I'm just painting a picture. There's good systemizers and bad systemizers. Have you thought about this? Is being a good systemizer like a God-given thing, or is this a learned skill?
I think it is something that's God-given in that I remember, like, I mean, we all agree that systemized businesses deliver better outcomes, better for staff, better for clients, better for the business owner, and even those that are oftentimes gifted with, you know, a systemized bone or something like that, where they know how to do it. Even when you chat with those that don't, we still agree that systems are important. Right. So if we understand that, I remember early on, my dad created this thing called the sheet, and it was for my brother and I to earn pocket money, basically. And you would earn points for doing different things, and at the end of the week, you'd get a payout depending on how many points you did. I loved the sheet. I embraced it. My brother, he did not. He pushed back against it. He didn't get ever any pocket money or anything like that. And I remember looking back on that moment thinking, now, well, there are two types of people. There are people who follow systems, and there are people who don't, and there are systems people, and there are people that aren't systems people. And, you know, in my family, and you can't choose your family, they are who they are. But in business, you can get to choose your staff. And if we know systems-driven businesses deliver better outcomes, then you should consciously start thinking about hiring systems-driven people. And a lot of businesses haven't given that a thought. And that goes double if you're a business owner that doesn't see themselves as a systems person. Right. Well, you better make sure that you surround yourself with systems-driven people because everything goes easier. Our staff, we get to choose. As the business owner, you don't. I mean, you are who you are, so you have to embrace that. Yeah. But just be aware, if you're not strong in that area, make sure you surround yourself with those that are.
Have you seen enough people who are non-systems people inherently become successful to sort of say, hey, listen, even if you're not a systems person, all's not lost for you. You can team build around yourself. You can sort of backfill the skill gaps that you might have. And even if you're not, have these God-given gifts around system building, there's still a pathway to a great and wonderful business that you're going to love.
There is. The trick is to focus on falling in love with what the systems deliver, not necessarily falling in love with the documentation. So me as a business owner, I don't love writing process and checklists. That's not my thing, but I've fallen in love with the result.
Yeah.
So as long as we can get the business owner to fall in love with that, they might not like the documenting and we can fill skills gap for that. But they need to believe in this enough because as the business owner, you're ultimately leading it. You can't just pass this off and say this is someone else's responsibility. I did some work with Michael E. Gerber. I talk about it in the book, Systemology, my book. And when I gave him the preview copy of the book, he said one thing that kind of really stuck in my head, which was, Dave, just remember, you can't let the business owner off the hook because it makes it sound when I wrote Systemology that I'm saying, oh, yes, your team does this, you surround all them, but the buck stops with you. You've got to lead this.
Well, I wanted to get this is we've sort of backed into a question slash a bit of a diatribe that I wanted to go on. And you know, my listeners will sort of know my views on this. I think I've shared them before. But so I have a sense about the world right now, particularly in the small business world, particularly in the blue collar business world where we live, that the whole like visionary idea, like populated by or popularized by Gino Wickman in Traction, has gotten a little out of control. I think people really gravitated towards that book and really love this idea of this visionary leader who gets to just do whiteboarding sessions all day. And then they hire this magical integrator who's going to build it all for them. And you can, and there's sort of like Steve Jobs overtones, and there's these very, we can sort of think of these mythical, iconic figures in business who we're told are heavy duty visionaries who have actually created something great. And then and this is the point that people don't like when I say this, we slap that visionary term on ourselves. And in my opinion, this is just my opinion, it's often just a label that we use to hide pretty bad behavior. It's like, you're just disorganized. And like you,
it's an excuse.
So
I
like,
agree.
Like I'm just a visionary. It's like
I'm a visionary.
It's like, yes. Okay. So the question is, in the realm that we're talking about, which is not, sorry guys, not building the iPhone, not creating the first iPad, not creating multi-touch touchscreens. It's running and scaling a really, really like well-built, well-designed, service-focused roofing, painting, plumbing business. In that box, what's more important to you? And I'm now asking your opinion. Is it visions or is it vision or is it systems? Like, is there one that you would tip the scale more of?
I'm a little bit biased. I'm going to say systems. It's funny. Again, I'll come back to Michael Gerber because he had a big imprint on the way that I think about and view the world. But he's always about it all starts with the dream, vision, purpose, and mission. And he's all about starting there. But the reality is, and he thinks that needs to be founded up front and you breathe that into the DNA of the business. And that's what births the business. The reality is a lot of the business owners listening to this are currently running businesses that are up and running, they've got teams,
correct,
they've already got traction, and they're now starting to, you know, feel some of the challenges of just being involved in everything. So I feel like the systems and the processes are a very key part of delegating down. Like, you have to get very clear on what's currently working, and we're talking about just making it repeatable. That's the biggest thing most small business struggles with. It's repeatability. You don't even have to be the best, but if you can be consistent, you consistently attract new leads into your business, you consistently have a way of converting them and doing the work, like, that's really what your clients crave. And I feel the process part, also that actually by getting process in place, that's what starts to create enough space that then lets the business owner work on higher value tasks and maybe work on the vision and stuff like that. But when you're stuck in the thick of it, you can't think of anything else than answering that phone call or chasing up that client, or you're right in it, and systems help to give the space.
Yeah, I it's really well said. There's a, like, my favorite soundbite of all time. I just finished the Steve Jobs bio, by the way, by Walter Isaacson. Really good. But there's this clip, and it's floated around LinkedIn. It's not long. It's a really good clip of him in, like, 1990. And what he says, people who have seen it will recognize the language. He says at the outset, he's like, people have no idea how much craftsmanship there is between a concept and a finished product. Like, you just can't imagine how much hands-on work and problem solving and system building is between me thinking it would be cool to have 1,000 songs in your pocket and the first iPod or iPod mini. Like, he just, and he's it's a comment on just him also, even as a visionary, respecting that the middle part, the systems part. And I just, anyway, I think people over-index on the vision piece at the cost, to their peril, at the cost of the systems piece. And I would just say, yes, you need vision. Yes, you need a bold leader. Yes, you need a mission and something that excites and rallies the troops. But that will get the ball rolling, but not very far. And then it's like, which direction is the ball even rolling? Is it down a track that we like? And so it's a long-winded way of saying I'm team systems, but I'm biased too.
Yes. And I mean, maybe we can put something that almost feels like someone who might have been in team vision can also start to cross over. I think if you've got an existing business and it's running, a great thing to focus on might be your core values, which by figuring out what do you stand for, what won't you stand for, that helps you to hire staff and fire staff and decide what clients to work with and whatnot. So it's up there with vision, but really the values are almost like a set of rules that you're operating by, which is really a system. So maybe that helps someone kind of make a little bit of a shift.
You've got this section in the book where you talk about, and it's a really clever packet of ideas. We talk about these four stages of business systemization: survival, stationary, scalable, and saleable. And I wonder if you can just unpack those four stages, and then on the heels of it, maybe just talk to our listeners about why it's really important to know where you're at on that spectrum.
Mm. Yeah. Look, a big part of the knowing where you're at, then figuring out where you want to get to, then it just makes it clearer because you know the starting point and you know the end point, which now makes it easier. So that's why this framework is helpful. And then, like, the four stages just reflects a lot of what internally is going on, maybe for the business owner or for the team. For example, survival, there's a certain level of chaos. You're kind of just on this roller coaster of trying to get work, win work, do the work, get to the end of that project, try and win work again. Everything's so key person dependent. One of the biggest things for that survival mode is the business owner doesn't even recognize that they're the bottleneck. They've got a level of unconscious incompetence, but they're like, they just don't know what it is that they don't know. So to move through to that next level, which is stationary, that's where there is a level of recognition that we've got some bottlenecks here. At stationary, you'll find that some people are in on the idea. Like, if you introduce, hey, we've got a way of doing things, and a lot of the IP though is trapped in the heads of the team members. That's what keeps them stationary at that level. Like, you're so key person dependent, and it moves beyond the business owner also. Like, hey, if Jenny doesn't come in on Wednesdays and issues out the invoices don't get issued out until she comes in. And it's that level, that it's almost like a glass ceiling. You can't grow past it because you're so dependent. You can't take on extra capacity because it all channels through these individual people. That's what holds you there. And there's no real documentation at that point in time. The next level, scalable, that's when you read the book Traction, or you read Vern Harnish's Scaling Up, and you start to get some systems in place, but it feels a little bit patchy. Mm. Parts of the business are more well documented than others, but it's not a cohesive system. It feels more like it's kind of Frankensteined together, for lack of a better word. And so parts of it work well. And it's funny, people get to that stage and feel like their business, oh yes, we're scalable, we've got some systems in place, we're starting to grow, but all of the magic actually happens in the final stage, which is the saleable stage. And I've started to change my languaging on that from when I launched the book, because it's not so much about being saleable, but more being buyable.
Yeah.
Because you may or may not sell, but it's getting the business to the point at which someone would want to buy. That's where you've got systems in all departments across the organization. That's where, and the biggest giveaway that you make it to this buyable stage is that if someone asks a question, the team goes, oh, this is how we do things here. Hmm. And the automatic default response is to point back to the process. If there's a problem, it's a problem with the process. And we address that first before going down to the individual. And that's really where you want to kind of goal towards. And that's when you start to seek becoming, you know, the industry standard and have people look towards you because you've got your processes to a particular level, and that's setting the standard. And you're in this constant pursuit of excellence. It's actually never ending when you get there, because you're constantly looking to innovate and understand that the marketplace is changing. It's more of a cultural thing in your organization as to how people approach problems and the way that they look to grow the business.
So well said, that last section. I love everything that you just shared. How important, this is a bit of a leading question because I know the answer, but like, intellectual honesty, I think, is really important. Yeah. And I suspect that a lot of people are maybe not totally, either because there isn't enough awareness or they're generally kind of conning themselves. They're not honest about which stage they're at. I think a lot of entrepreneurs probably think they're a rung or two ahead of where they actually are in reality. The occasional one might actually, might actually be further ahead than where they are, but I would say most probably chin themselves on a stage that they're not quite at yet, because they're focused on vision versus reality. And if you interviewed the owner versus you interviewed the employees or customers, you would get very, very different data and feedback from like where this business actually is. And so this is, I want to, the question is for businesses, let's just maybe play with two stages. If someone's in survival, genuinely in survival, what is like the one thing that they need to be really focused on to move to stationary? And if they're in stationary, what's the one thing that they should focus on to move to scalable?
Mm. So for survival, one of the biggest things is just to recognize that you are the bottleneck. Like I actually make stepping out of the survival mode very easy for someone, because you've just got to understand, systems are the way, I'm the bottleneck, I've got to get some of this IP out of my head. So I actually think probably everybody listening to this, just by listening to this and following your work, I reckon they're kind of already starting to step out. They might feel like they have a foot in survival and there's a level of chaos. I get that. But it's when you get to the stationary mode, which is, that's the biggest thing to get out of that stage, is extracting the IP out of the brains of the key team members.
Okay. Interesting.
That's probably the big thing. And you're right, though, probably where people misjudge which level they're in. I often hear people, they'll go, oh, yes, in my, you know, operations, I'm in buyable, or in these categories I am, but, you know, in the marketing, I'm not. And so they don't think about their business as a whole. They're kind of going, well, we're strong in this area, and we're strong in this area, not understanding that nothing happens in a vacuum in your business. Your business is one big system. And if certain subsystems are underperforming, it's bringing down the overall health of the larger system. Mm-hmm. So it's, you have to understand that everything's connected, and then that helps you be more real about where you are.
Mm. One of the very real experiences as a business owner is getting to a point where you have kind of problem overwhelm. Like there are, to use just relatable language that everyone uses, there are so many fires burning that you're not really sure which one to put out first. And one of my favorite quotes of all time is, I can't remember who said it, but prioritize is the most important verb in business. And I believe that. Yeah. How do you coach business owners to begin to prioritize which system to attack first? Like, is there a method? Is there a framework? Yeah. Are there steps involved to figuring out? Because you can't, like, it is on some level at certain stages, it can feel like triage. I live in a place where we have forest fires, serious ones all the time. The firefighters have to look at it and they have to go, this one first, this one second. Yep. This one we're not even going to freaking worry about. We'll never get to it. Yeah. So, that's a useful setup. Like how do you coach business owners to just go, okay, this one first, this one second, and so on and so forth?
Yeah. So I think one good thought to keep in mind is just because you don't systemize something doesn't mean it's going to magically stop happening. Your business is already kind of working. There's already fires that are already going on. The business and team members are already doing some level of triage. So what we're talking about now, it's not going to make anything any worse. Mm. So, I mean, it is what it is. So that's probably the first piece. The second piece then is go, okay, well, where are we going to start? And it's about, I mean, we apply the 80-20 and we think about the key 20% of the systems that deliver the bulk of the result. Generally speaking, if I'm starting to work with someone, there's two steps I'll go through. One, I love to first focus on how does the business make money? So we pick a dream client, a primary product or service, and then we high level map, you know, the flow. How do we grab someone's attention? How do we close that business? How do we onboard them? How do we deliver? How do we get them to come back? And I just do that for one product. I do it very high level, only a few words in each box, just to first get the lay of the land. Then the next question I ask is, where within that, we call it the critical client flow, is the pain? As in, which bit is the business owner, you know, either consciously or subconsciously avoiding because they know, oh, this is painful. You know, if I don't want to sell too hard because if I sell, I'm going to get more clients and I'm already really full with work at the moment. So that's just going to be even harder. So they subconsciously push clients away, or maybe they don't have enough leads, or maybe it's a cash flow issue. We try and figure out. And if that's not clear to them, I'll even say, well, if you got 10 times as many customers as you have right now, what breaks first? And then they'll say, well, I don't even think I could get 10 times as many customers. Okay, well, maybe we start in on your marketing systems, or, oh, I have some problems with client expectations. Okay, well, let's focus in on the onboarding. So a lot of it has to do with either where's the pain or where does the business break?
You had mentioned, I read in the book this critical client flow, and you mentioned it a second ago. Can we just double click in on that for listeners? Because it looked like a really, I was looking at it in the book, and it's, you sort of had it diagrammed out, and there's a few kind of resources on your online stuff that painted the picture. It looks to me like something like, I don't know, like lean process mapping or like value stream mapping. Like it's basically an exercise to help you as a business owner understand the true core functions of your business, which, I mean, that might sound obvious. You should know that if you own your own business, you should know where that is already. It's actually kind of surprising how out of touch sometimes we can get with that. So just walk us through the critical client flow, that whole exercise, where it fits in.
Yeah. So the idea of applying the 80-20, we're just trying to go, all right, well, if the business, it's important that the business makes money, because if the business can make money without key person dependency, then the we're able to generate money without, let's say, the business owner or some of these key team members. And most problems in business can be solved with money and cash flow. So that's why we start there. So then it's just a matter of going, okay, at the basic most element, how does the business make money? And we're talking about, like, what is the flow, the linear journey that the dream client or prospect would go through to deliver that primary product or service? We only start with one product first because, you know, you might have loads of different products and services, but what would be the perfect gateway into your business, the perfect starting point? Maybe it's an emergency plumbing call out. Maybe it's, you know, you think about, what is that gateway? And we go, right, there's my dream client. I'd like hundreds more of them. Here is the first product I'd sell to them. And then, yes, we map the linear journey, and it's, we capture what we're currently doing, not what we would like to be doing, because that can be quite telling as you start to map this out if there are gaps or holes. But we say, how do we capture the attention of our target audience? Once we've got their attention, how does that inquiry come into the business? Is it filling out a form? Is it calling through the 1-800 number? Whatever it is. Then how do we handle that incoming inquiry? Is there some sort of qualification of that lead? How do we then sell them? Do we go out on site and we have a look and then quote them and measure it up and then go away and create the proposal? And great, once they've signed off, how do we collect some money? Do we get a deposit? Do they pay all up front, or do they pay it at the end of the project? Then, right, once they're ready to go and they've signed off, how do we then onboard them into your systems? Like, what are the back end infrastructure? How do you manage your projects? What information do you need to ask the client? Is there a checklist or a form that they have to fill out? Then how do we deliver the work, actually doing the work? And again, this is all very high level first. You just want to explain it on one A4 page. That's the real key, is if you can map the critical client flow and someone who is at arm's reach from your business could follow the critical client flow, who doesn't really know what you do, but still go, I kind of get what you do now. And that's, yeah, we and then it finishes up with the handover and whether or not there's sort of any repeat or referral work. Mapping that, only capturing what you're currently doing, and looking for and thinking about the gaps can be very telling. But that exercise alone is great for the team, because it then also helps them to understand, where do I fit into this picture? How am I adding value? Who comes before me? Who goes after me? Why is it important? Where do I sit in this chain? So that this is actually how we start systemology, by starting with this exercise.
Well, and I think it's an incredibly important step, because I am blown away at how often businesses we work with, and I'm going to throw myself under the bus, like, even I still to this day build solutions for problems that don't exist. Like, it happens all the time. And it's because people, you don't stop and go, what is the actual root issue here? And there's a whole bunch of, you know, the five whys, the probing questions. There's so many different ways to get to the bottom of the thing, so to speak. But I still do this, where I'm just like, we're solutioning something without a nuanced understanding of the problem in the first place. And that 10 times out of 10 leads to crappy outcomes and a whole bunch of waste. And so I think that it's worth slowing down and really thinking about, what is the explicit thing we're trying to solve here? Now, assuming that business owners can get clarity on what to tackle first, second, third, and so on, I've got a whole package of questions about system building in general. So can we just dive into that?
Let's do it.
The first, Dave, is like, who should do it? And this is big. Like, is it the owner? Is it the owner's team? Does it depend on if they're a system person or not? Should ChatGPT do it all? Like, who should be building systems in the context of a small business?
Yeah. We talk about this role of the systems champion. I think every business needs to recognize that this is a really important, valuable role, and someone needs to do it. And oftentimes, if it hasn't been bestowed upon someone, then chances are the business owner is the systems champion and they're doing a rubbish job at it.
And what do we mean by systems champion? Let's just define that idea in the first place.
Yeah. So a systems champion is the person whose responsibility it is to help to build a systems culture and champion this. They'll support, especially it's so important at the start when you're trying to get this off the ground. And why I often recommend that the business owner isn't the systems champion is because the business owner is busy. They might not have space and they'll go, oh, this is important. And they'll work on it for a week or two. And then something else that's important will pop up. So the systems champion will continually work on this, keep this front and center, make sure that we build enough habits and plant enough evidence in the organization that we are a systems driven business. So it's a role that changes over time, depending on how systemized the business is. In the early days, it might just be talking about it on team meetings and meeting with certain team members and helping them to document the process and organizing all of those processes into a single location. So it will require different things at different times, but first recognizing we need someone whose focus this is, because if it's everybody's focus, really it's nobody's focus. We need someone who we say it is your responsibility to keep driving this forward to get this particular outcome.
So I like everything that you just said, except for one observation that I've seen in reality out there in the wild, and I wonder if you can maybe coach us through it, is I think that people take this idea and their interpretation of it or how it gets rolled out into their actual business is something, some version of this. I hired this really smart young woman to be an office manager, and it turns out she's really good at spreadsheets, and she's played around with this tool called Asana, and she seems like a systems person. And I'll, you know what? She's going to systemize my business, or he's going to systemize my business. And there's just, and then what happens is they totally under-resource that person. They don't understand that just because you're good at Excel doesn't mean that you like understand the inner workings of the business. And you have and they abdicate the systemization way too much. So I think like there's a finer point to make here. I don't actually think that a business owner could or should micromanage the implementation of every single core system a business needs. It wouldn't be feasible. But I also don't know if just I'm not sure if like just, hey, systems champion, you do it all, works either, because I've seen it fail a bunch. Is there like, what advice would you have for someone who wants to install a systems champion, who's going to build a systems culture, who's going to probably build a critical mass of early systems and hopefully create a movement behind them so some of it becomes self-fulfilling? Like if we want to do that, that's a good outcome. What mistakes do they not need to make in order to ensure that that is indeed how it all goes?
I think something that you mentioned about the time, effort, and resources it's going to take, I think having an appreciation for that, and systemization is not a sprint and you get to the end and you're done. You never actually get done. We're talking about changing the culture, so, and a way of thinking inside the organization. And that has to do with changing habits, and people are stuck in doing things a certain way. And you mentioned about this idea of starting a movement. So the systems champion, I don't know if you ever saw that video. This guy, Derek Sivers, talks over the top of this dancing man on the side of a hill there, where he starts a movement at a music festival. And the first guy there is the business owner, and he's dancing there and he looks like a crazy person. And then the first person that runs out transforms that crazy person from a lone nut into a leader. That first person that runs out is effectively the systems champion.
Right.
So that person is then welcomed and celebrated by the leader, and they join in and they start dancing. And effectively the systems champion is showing everybody else, hey, this is how you follow along. This is, you know, I'm getting celebrated by the leader here. You know, it's okay to join in, and they help to support others. So understanding that, it can't all rest on the systems champion's shoulders. They're just that really important first follower. And we want to pick them wisely. I mean, if I was to give some advice on that, some of the best systems champions I've seen are the junior apprentice. It's the junior plumber, the junior electrician, the junior who may know how to do a bit of the technical work. They've just come out of school. They're hungry. They're curious. They're ready to go. Oftentimes they might be a little bit organized and they want to learn, but they don't yet understand all of the work involved around the technical work to run the business.
Yeah.
And getting that apprentice on because they're hungry and they want to learn, and empowering them up and reminding them, hey, you're kind of putting things in place for people to come in behind you and take over some of these things. Like, that's a great fit. But it's you are right. A lot of people sometimes abandon this too early. They don't give enough resources to it, and then they go, oh, this didn't work. I tried to systemize, but my team didn't jump on board.
Yeah.
When you've got to commit time, effort, and resources over a long period.
Well, one of the things that I've observed a lot is, and I think this is especially true of leaders, is there's an estimating issue. And like, and I, that's the right term for it, especially for this audience, because every type of contractor estimates on some level, whether it's you, the owner, or you have an estimator and you go out and you know, I come from the painting world, and the estimating is very easy. It's square feet of siding plus how many windows plus doors, fascia, whatever. And there's a different formula for interiors. But in just from first principles, there's an equivalent for landscaping and an equivalent for building a home. And some of them are more complex. Some of them are more simple. But most of these businesses have estimating as a core function. And they're and by the way, they're pretty freaking good at it because they you it hurts when you're bad at it. And so they learn quickly. The problem is we don't have very good estimating for internal system building, and I would say internal projects and project management in general. Mm-hmm. I've noticed this in our own business. I'm like, God, you're looking at this thing and you're saying that this thing is this big, but it's not just this big. It's this big and it's four dimensional. It's like there's this angle and this hallway, and you're totally like, you have dramatically misestimated the size, scope, complexity, and resources needed with insert system needed, like whatever it is we're talking about. And so we get down these, and I'm not saying that we need to allocate endless budget and time for internal system building, but I trace it back to fundamentally an estimating problem where people just badly misjudge how much work a thing is.
Yeah, look, I think people definitely underestimate because they don't have any real experience doing this. And this whole systemization can be quite foreign to them. And all they've got as something to compare against, they go, oh, McDonald's is a systemized business.
McDonald's always comes up. They're the perfect example. Thank you for saying that. They're always like, we want to run like McDonald's. It's like, yes, I'm sure you do, man.
The reality is McDonald's has been doing this for 60 years and they run a different business. I think there's probably very few people listening right now that run hamburger businesses. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to copy everything that they are doing blindly, and understand as well that we're just looking at the result of 60 plus 70 years worth of work. Yeah. And we're looking at the end going, oh, I want a business like that. And then we try and start systemizing like it is today, not thinking about, well, where did McDonald's get started? And if we rewind the clock and go all the way back, what are the first systems and processes did they get in place? How clunky was it? They didn't have everything documented. So it's the picture a business owner has in their head of what systemization looks like is not clear, which then makes it very hard for them to estimate.
Yeah.
And then they think it's going to happen very easily and very quickly, but we're talking about cultural change and getting the team to do things. Like, it's a worthy pursuit that can pay incredible dividends if someone wants to build the business of their dreams. So it's something that – and there is no way to build a profitable business that works without you without this.
Yeah.
So it's – just like business, you've got to lean into this and you've got to just stick with it and keep going at it because this is business.
Now, one super important facet of this whole conversation is like the project management associated with system building. Because like, I do see it in those terms. Like every system is ultimately a project. There's a problem, and then there's a scope developed, and then there's stakeholders decided on, and there's timelines figured out, and there's a V1 built, and then a final version built, and then there's quality control and an implementation process. Like it is, again, I use the estimating example. It is very akin to building a project for a customer, but now we're our own client in these instances. Can you maybe give us a roadmap? You mentioned you have this thing in the book called the system for building systems. Like what sort of muscles do we need to develop? What sort of steps do we need to follow to be to have good project management around the system building in our own businesses?
Yeah. I think and it's a tough one to install if you don't yet have it, but at some point you'll need to have some level of project management. And I know in the trades-based business, you know, you've either got jobs management systems or task management systems or something, and it's very specific to the way that you might be doing something for a client for a build. If we can have something similar for this project and other internal projects, it just needs to be clear whose responsibility it is, what does the timeline look like. We have to start to put maybe some milestones in place. You know, we're going to document the critical client flow first, and then we'll move into this department or that department. And it's something collaboratively that the business owner and some of the key leadership team members will do along with the systems champion. And the systems champion is there to help support it. I think having that tool in place is key.
Like an Asana, like a Monday.com, there's dozens, but you're talking a tech-based, software-based or cloud-based tool that helps us plan and organize projects.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes. And then thinking about those milestones. This is actually the topic for my next book. The first book, Systemology, was for the business owner. I'm writing a book at the moment called Systems Champion, and it's for the team member who's then going to do the implementation inside the business and giving them the tools. Because yes, there's a, you know, we need to get the lay of the land of, you know, what SOPs and checklists and what software are we already using? What does the team look like? Have we got any supporters? Who's going to be the detractors? What have we got to start with? That's usually where we start. Then we start to move into the critical client flow, which we touched on. We map it, but then we also need to document it. And then we need to start to think about, and the tools, where are these things going to be saved? You know, maybe it is a project management platform. Maybe we need some sort of systems management platform where all of the how-to information gets stored. And then we have to start to think about, are there other things that we can do to get the team on board? Like I suggest, the systems champion runs little workshops and hops on team meetings, and you have a system of the month where someone gets a reward if they've done something to do with the systems. Like a big part of the job of the systems champion, I talk about, imagine you're in a court of law and you needed to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that you run a systems-driven business. What evidence could you produce? And it's the job of the systems champion to plant as much evidence as they can throughout the organization. So kind of give some different tips on, well, what are evidence? What can you put into place? And then, yeah, there's a few other sort of other things, but that, I mean, that'll get you well and truly on the way.
I think a few things that I would, that really resonate with me is I don't think that you can do this effectively through Slack messages and emails and WhatsApp and phone calls. I do think a tool embedded and well understood across the organization is kind of a fundamental prerequisite. In other words, that's the first system you build. The first thing that you do is figure out, you know, a project management protocol or a workflow for building future systems. That's the first SOP you need. So I'm big on that. The flip side, or what happens after a systems is built, is what we might call fostering adoption or change management or getting people to actually adhere. And this is something we've talked about on the show, but it bears repeating. How do we avoid a situation where we spend a whole bunch of time and resources creating stuff that nobody uses?
Yeah. So look, there's a few things here. The first thing I think about what the systems champion does. I'm just doing that by default at the moment now because I'm writing the book. But the job of the systems champion isn't necessarily to enforce, but they're trying to put all of the infrastructure in place to remove those excuses that we talked about earlier. So people's excuses we can just knock over straight away, which is, I didn't know how. Okay, well, if we have a documented process and it's never more than one click away from the moment at which someone's doing that task, it's readily accessible. And then next time they say, I didn't know how, we can go, okay, well, here's the process. Here's the link. I've included it. You know, it's now in your calendar booking and you'll find a link to the system right there. That gets rid of that excuse. The next lot of excuses is, well, I didn't know that that was expected of me. Okay, so now we use jobs management or task management, project management platforms to go, well, this is the task. You do it once a week. You're responsible and it's captured somewhere. There's zero confusion. Now we've started to remove that as an excuse. So no longer all that is left is I don't want to, or I haven't prioritized this, or I don't have time to get to it. That then is more of a performance management thing. And it's not the job of the systems champion, but perhaps the supervisor right. To go, hey, we've got a way of doing things. I've told you what it is. It's very clear. We've outlined it. You know, is there something else I can do to help support you through this? We are moving towards this way of doing business. And I talked about it in the first book, which you mentioned about the system for creating systems. I've got another funny one that appears in the Systems Champion book, which is the system for not following systems, which is then, okay, well, what do you do? What is your process? How do you escalate non-compliance? And at what point do you draw the line? Because a lot of business owners, especially, let's say you've got a great tradesperson who's really great at the work that they do, and you're trying to build a culture of systems, what happens if this great tradesperson, you keep letting them off the hook? And you've given them everything and you've supported them, at some point you're going to have to make a decision. And part of this is for your existing staff because you didn't give systems thinking a thought in your recruitment and your onboarding process. So you might have got someone on board who just doesn't follow process because that's their makeup. Yeah. And you will have to make a decision at some point in time, what type of business are you building?
The other reason, and this is worth tucking in here, the other reason they don't get followed is sometimes the system, it just wasn't that, like we've made a mistake. So one of the things that I've done a lot of times is I've built stuff that just isn't that good. It takes putting it into reality to get people using it, to get the feedback, to learn that this thing, this mental concoction that I came up with is 60% right and 30% wrong and 10% not even on the map. And so I've built the wrong thing. And I, the leader, needs to go back.
Yes.
The word would be iterative. So there's some good stuff here, but we got to make this better. What are your thoughts for that? Because that's really where some of the fine tuning is. And I think people throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's like, no, you have most of an onboarding process. Just these two steps, you've completely screwed. Let's fix those and not chuck the whole thing. Thoughts on that?
Yeah. Especially when you're getting started out, I'm actually going to suggest that you don't try and optimize or over-engineer or anything. You literally just say, who on the team already does this thing the best? Well, John is great at estimating and he's the best on the team. Great. Well, let's find out what he's doing and bring everybody up to that standard rather than re-engineering something to try and make it just right. That's step number one. Let's just figure out best practice and get there. And then, yes, exactly as you said, once we start to build a bit of a culture of systems, people get their heads around it. They understand that this is about improvement and it's not that their jobs are on the line or they should be worried or anything. You just want to build the right culture around this. We then want to create a safe space for people to then be able to give feedback. Oh, this step is broken. Didn't quite work. Okay, great. Well, let's now have a look at how do we make adjustments to that system.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a lot of the times that last 10% that you need to keep your eye on the ball and stay committed to the process instead of abandoning the whole thing because it didn't work on your first go, right? I mean, your favorite comedian, to use a great example, doesn't have his like super tight Netflix hour worked out. They do open mic night to figure out what people laugh at and what people don't. And they work at it, they work at it, they work at it until they have this beautiful thing that you laugh at. And I think system building is the same way, but sometimes we're impatient and we kind of abandon things too soon. I've got a really
Can I ask you a quick question? Have you seen the movie The Founder?
Yeah. The Ray Kroc one.
Yes, yeah, about the McDonald's guy. Mm-hmm. There's a scene right at the start of that movie where they're coming up and figuring out their systems, and they go out onto a basketball court and they get some chalk out and they map out the floor plan of what a McDonald's store is going to look like. And they go, oh, let's put the thick shake machine here. Let's put the fryer here. Oh, let's move, you know, where the counter is because people are going to walk in front of each other and it's going to get all cloggy. Okay, let's move it around. That's the way that systems are built. It's just raw and you figure it out and, oh, that didn't work and let's move it. That's why I'm talking about it being you need to build a culture of systems and a way of being. This is not like a, hey, we've just designed the perfect system, because you don't actually know without putting it into practice and then feeling what works and what doesn't.
So well said. This is a good question to close on. I think most people are familiar with the standard talking points associated with why you should systemize your business, right? It's more profitable, it's less stress, it's easier for the employees, and one day it makes your business an asset that is saleable and worth something. And then there might be three or four that I've forgotten, but there's kind of this standard packet of ideas. A question for you that I feel like you would uniquely have, Dave, just because of how big your sample size is working with so many businesses. What are some sneaky benefits that pleasantly surprise entrepreneurs on the other side of their systemization journey that they maybe weren't expecting in the first place?
I think a level of calm can come into the business that's unexpected, that a lot of the small niggling problems just get handled. And it's not that the problems disappear. In business, I feel like all it's really doing, because there's always challenges, all it's really doing is leveling you up to a higher quality problem. You just have to, you start solving bigger and bigger things. So I think that, you know, it's unexpected, because sometimes people just think, oh, I'll systemize everything and it'll run smoothly and I can go lie on the beach and everything just hums away. It's not quite the case. There is a level of calm in the day-to-day, but you know, the reality is you still be working this stuff. You still have to grow and innovate. I mean, there's times when you can step in it and out of it, but I mean, this comes back to what you were talking about earlier around abdicating responsibility. That as long as you want to keep growing this business, like, this is kind of the job of the business owner. We just want to get you solving on the highest value problems.
Yeah. I love that idea of calmness. I think that's what I've noticed too, is your alarm systems aren't going off all the time. There's still issues, but they handle themselves, or somebody on your team handles it without your involvement. And there's sort of, it's a very felt thing. It's like, it's in the nervous system. Like that's kind of like where you feel it. It's just like, this is, you know, it's fine. Everything's good. Okay, the book is Systemology, the new book. When does it come out? Where can people get it? Give us sort of where can people follow you and find you online, Dave?
Amazon's the best place. The first book's already up there, so just search Systemology. And if you're listening to this, you're probably an audio person, and there is a book on Audible if you want to hear that version. The new book, Systems Champion, will come out mid-year, so mid-2025, sort of July is kind of where I'm aiming towards again. It'll just go through Amazon. I feel like that's the best place. I always write books that are useful and complete. And then if you just need some more help, you can go a bit deeper. Just head to systemology.com and it links through to our socials, and we've got a podcast and a YouTube channel, just some extra resources. I only focus on this topic. Like, this is kind of my contribution to the small business world, because I feel like it is so valuable yet so poorly and underaddressed. So that's just where I'm focusing.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Poorly and underaddressed. And I think you're doing an awesome job addressing it. Dave, thank you so much for the time, the wisdom, the insight, and we'll have to have you back again soon. Cheers, my friend.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.